This little micro routine will do it all for you over there without programming. You may say, this is programming after all. After all, I'm using a little micro routine and I'm using even microcomputer. But let's face it, it is not the real thing. It is only a small routine and it's more like part of the hardware. Yeah, well, now we have seen how we can convert or learn single numbers and convert a word into a single address number. Now, can we convert the address numbers back into the words? Well, the answer is yes, we can. All infinite dimensional networks are reversible. We use data compression, but we do not use data destruction. Data can always be retrieved. Okay, this is the output put network, which I show over there, which contains the answers to our question. Remember, the original question where Rose is red, robot is ready, and IDNs are smart, and the idea is good, or whatever. And how did we generate that particular network? Well, exactly the same way as we showed before. So in other words, you teach it the answer as well as the question. Somebody has to teach it. Nobody learns by itself. But what I want to show in this particular network is how we retrieve the data from the address numbers. As you can see from that network, there's only one possible trail to go back. If we follow it backward, each one of this trail, you can see it's quite obvious. It leads always back to the beginning here. And what's obvious for that network is not quite as obvious for that memory device there. So we need some kind of little algorithm to do it for us. Well, okay, let's see how it's done in the microroutine. We wait for the number input, namely this one single number representing a word. The concept number, that means the number we got from the top, is really our first address. So we fetch the memory word from that, we fetch a word from that memory over there, and put it into the matrix. And when we got the matrix, it gives us a gate character from the address which was specified by the first one, a gate character and a pointer. The pointer will be our next character. You see, a pointer is just like when I give you this address here. The pointer is 10, which points to the previous node. Every node points to the previous node where it is connected to. So you can follow the trail directly back, updating your pointer, fetching words, and going back until you finally got the whole word rows out again. So you can store data in this kind of network, you can learn them, and you can also retrieve them. One slight flaw of this thing is that when you retrieve the message, like see if we want to retrieve the word smart from this number here, the numbers we retrieve is T, R, A, M, S, which is the reverse, they're retrieved in reverse order. But that's not a problem. You can always use a first in, last out buffer or something. Yeah, now for the final step, which hopefully makes sense now. We connect the input network here, the question network, and the answer network with a so-called bipolar network. This again is a network which, just like any other memory, contains two pointers, one pointing to the address and one pointing to the question. Okay, if we type in the question rose, for example, now, let's do it. It's R-O-S-E. And if the answer is already known, then we find pointer 4 in that node 1 on the top there, which points to the question. And it also supplies the output number 3 for the answer, which is over there on the top. And if we follow that trail back to the beginning, we got D-E-R, which is the reverse for red. So in other words, we give it a question, and there comes out the answer. And I remind you, this pointer and address numbers, it's all done by a microprocessor. All we feed in, type in our teletype is rows, and out of the answer we get out is red. No programming. Yeah, well, what if the address number is not yet contained? What if we we teach it a word, or we ask it a question where it has no answer for yet? Well, like the word idea, I-D-E-A. Remember, it learned this new trail because it didn't have it before. It stored it here in the end of the memory. Okay, then what it says is that it comes to a dead node and it can't find any matching node in the bipolar network. So it simply signals the human educator or the human teacher, please supply me with an answer. And the human educator does it by typing in the answer in the output network, convert it to a single number, and then storing both input question and output in the same thing. It's like learning the question to an answer. Again, there's no involvement with address numbers, pointers, or anything at all. All you do is type in things on your teletype. This is a very, very primitive system indeed. But let's see how it would behave. The human teacher would only work with a typewriter. All the internal functions would be performed by network generators. The human teacher never has to worry about pointers or memory, just questions and answers. This system would absorb the teacher's knowledge just like a human child. It would remember all the answers to the questions and automatically learn new ones. But remember, this computer has an unlimited, super reliable memory. It never forgets. It's mathematically precise, not like our own messy brain. It never forgets. This one never does forget. In fact, it can become smarter than the human teachers by a process called knowledge amplification. This is the weirdest thing of all. This happens when many teachers teach a computer the same subject. You see, this computer learns an answer to a question only once. Although once it knows the answer for rose is red, it will never learn that again. Once it's stored in the memory, it will always follow the same trail. So any knowledge taught before will not be absorbed again. This feature will cause memory saturation. In other words, if there's a teacher teaching it answers to certain questions, after a while the teacher will simply run out of questions and out of answers. There are just so many words in our English language, and there are only so many sentences you can talk to. And don't say that there are thousands of words in the English language. So what? It's 1K of memory. So what? Yep. This diagram shows what I mean. This is a storage requirement, and this is a stored data. The more data you want to store, the more memory requirement you have if you store data. But knowledge will saturate. The more knowledge you store, the less memory requirement you will have. And this what makes it as easy for us humans to remember the face of a stranger, which consists of megabytes of information, than to learn a new telephone number. It's just as easy for us, and this will explain why. Well, this, what I showed you before, were only primitive networks so far. Don't think that's the only thing. There are more exotic networks, like this one, which contains two gates and two pointers. It shows a hereditary tree. In other words, you have a child which has a mother and a father, has a name and a birthday, and if you file that in a memory system like this, it is an imaginary network where they all interconnect together. So if you were to establish such a network, you could find your great and great great grandfather automatically. The computer would sort it out for you. Yeah, this network would organize itself and show the relationship of all the people in the network. This network is also very flexible. You can add new numbers to it any time. And if you dig out some old files, then just add them to it. It doesn't matter where in the memory you store it. Yeah, we talked about different networks architectures, but what about different data? Let's take this robot for example. We talked about teletype inputs, but that was only the most primitive examples. We can have a robot with artificial sense organs, an eye which can actually see, and ears which can actually hear. And if you put motion transducer in those limbs of the robot, all we have to do is lead them through its motion. It will learn automatically. And it will never learn a second time. So if you teach it how to write a letter and you teach it again, it will not learn again. But it will absorb any piece of knowledge you ever store in it. And mind you, no programming. You don't need to know what's going on inside that thing. Only lead its arms through the motion. Yeah, and then this is not all of it either. There are other classes of network. This, for example, is a parallel network in which the pointer values, which I talked before, are implied. There are different networks which organize, go to a single point in space. Again, no programming required. It will build itself. But it's a different class of network altogether. But there are different classes of networks, there are different data, and there are different algorithms that all do essentially the same thing. Well, how do we build a practical system out of this? Well, let's ask a master builder with lots of experience, namely Mother Nature. She might show us how our brain works. This excursion into biology might relax you a bit while before we get to real systems which you can build with your microprocessor. So it's just for fun, let's see how the brain could possibly work. Well, this is our brain. And people have been poking around for a long time trying to figure out how it works. And they have been trying to measure nerve cell impulses, but they have not found the real actual equation behind it. Well, to present another theory of how a brain operates is just like founding a new religion. There has been plenty of that before. And I'm certainly not the first guy. But in this case, however, I can show you algorithms. I could show you computers which can directly do the same thing. And so you can prove it. You can build a computer which works exactly like the brain. And if they both happen to agree, well, then you probably found something. Well, this is what the most primitive unit or the transistor of our brain looks like. It's the nerve cells. There are many different kinds of nerve cells, but they have some things in common. One is that they have a cell body where some tree-like extension go out of. They're called dendrites. And the other side, it has a long extension, which is called the axon. And the axon spreads out in the end again to connect to other cells. Okay, this is what Mother Nature gave us. And how do we design a system with those things? Well, this is another nerve cell. As you can see, there are so many different kinds. In fact, that is the basic theory of it. There are many different kinds. Each one is specialized. Okay, the nerve cells connect to each other with so-called synapses here. The axon of the previous cell connects to the next cells with little extensions here called axons, synapses. And the synapse transmits a signal from the previous cell, an electrical impulse, onto this cell. But this cell will either fire or will not fire, depending on how many inputs it gets. And also, to make it even more interesting, there are two kinds of synapses. One are positive and one are negative, or excitatory and inhibitory. That means one makes the cell more likely to fire, the other makes it less likely to fire. Yeah, and there's no way to figure out which one is which by just looking through a microscope. Okay, a cell which receives an input from several positive synapses will fire. And fire means that it will reverse its polarity for a very short time and restore itself right afterwards. How could these cells interconnect themselves into an infinite dimensional network? Let's look at the human eye, which has been most extensively studied. This is how it looks like, the first stage in the data processing of our eyes. Light comes in its so-called rod cells, which then are interconnected with other nerve cells into higher and higher hierarchies. If we look at a picture of a horse, for example, we find that it's really made out of microline or micro patterns. There are straight lines here, or points in space, or some edges, dark edges, or vertical or horizontal line. So if you take a picture of a horse and look at it like in a TV picture, you find it's mixed all out of dots. Now our eyes work pretty much the same way. Yeah, how can the eye, or how can those cells organize themselves into a precise network without outside guidance? Who tells them where to connect to? Which is really the central question. That's one of the decoding units. There's a layer here of cells, and there's a next layer of cells over there. When those cells in this layer fire, they connect their axons to the next layer of cells. And if enough pulses arrive at the next layer cell, it will fire. But as you can see here, each one of the next layer cell has a unique pattern. 1, 2, and 3. That means if cell 1, 2, and 3 fires, or 2, 3, and 4. So they're all connected in a very precise way. There's no cell which is connected to the same cell in the previous layer. And that can be explained because the way they organize themselves. Let's say the human also which sees something is not yet very old, so it sees a pattern which has never existed before. Okay, this pattern would make nerve cell 1, 3, and 4 fire. Now all of a sudden there is no such cell in the next layer. And now my theory goes as follows: if those three, if a cell group in this layer fires, and it is answered by a decoded cell in the next layer, if cells fire in this layer, it will cause a disturbance, which we can see in our brain waves. If it's answered by a decoded cell in the next layer, then this disturbance will be eradicated. It will be compensated. Now, if this three cells fire here in this layer, they cause a disturbance or an imbalance. And all of a sudden, there's nobody to answer the next layer. So the dendrites of those cells grow until they connect, until one of those virgin cells, I call them, connects to the previous network. Once this has happened, the virgin cell will fire and remove the imbalance and stop every other virgin cell from growing. Which of those many cells will connect to these three cells? Well, the one which gets there first. Nature does it quite a bit. When a forest grows, nobody tells which tree has to grow, become tall, and which one has to die. They're simply the ones who are stronger will grow, and the ones who are weaker will die. So who goes there first will do it. This simple algorithm makes it possible for our complete network, from our eye input, a complex pattern, to be converted into a single output, into a single point. A single nerve cell fires for this, such a complex pattern as horse. So the laws of the brain, or the way I understand it, is that the brain consists of layers of genetically distinct layers of nerve cells, with synapses connect it in with synapses which connect in itself into an infinite dimensional network. You'll find a closer description like that in the proceeding. Okay, this is the law of the brain. That's what Mother Nature tells us how to build a brain. And what do we should we learn from this? Is that we should build our brain like computers. A brain like computer should consist of layers of specialized infinite dimensional network generators. So now we can into the real thing, is how can you do it? How can you build yourself a cheap system which will do just that? A computer which needs no programming, which can be sold at a profit. Well, it's obvious that if we could build some simple device to sell for profit, we could finance the development of fancy brain machines. But first we have to design something cheap, something you can do and something you can start. So that's the cheapest thing I could come up with. It would consist of something like a mass memory here, a floppy disk or a tape cassette, which contains the network memories. And the first portion of that thing would be a microprogram to generate those networks, those routines. It consists of a cheap microprocessor and a bootstrap ROM. The bootstrap ROM tells it how to read in the first portion of the program into the buffer RAM. So it can execute the networks from here. And then, of course, you need some interface to your home TV set and a keyboard. What would this interface, system do what the other systems cannot do? Well, for one thing, it needs no programming. Once you have those little microroutines set up in here, you can teach it anything you like. Language translation, data compression, games, anything you want. No more programming required. But we'll come to that, exactly what you can do. Well, of course, this is a very cheap toy system. It's something which you should build, but it's, of course, not the ultimate thing. The ultimate thing, we will have bubble memories and very large mass fancy laser memories. Well, this is what a network generator looks like. It's just as simple as that. A little microprocessor, a microcode ROM for exactly the microcode it needs, and some buffer RAM here. In fact, all these things is pretty much just like one chip, or the cheap ones you can get. So any cheap microprocessor and some memory, any kind of memory you have, will do. A more practical system would look like this. You have several networks stored in some kind of a ROM, or whatever. You have a buffer RAM to buffer the data, and you have an input-output device for some kind, and a cheap microprocessor and a shared mass memory. So all the networks would be contained in that same mass memory. Remember, no programming in this. Once you have that ROM set up, which would be indeed be a very short ROM, then you can teach it whatever you like. Okay, let's be precise. What exactly can we do? What is practical with those things? This is a symbolic form which I chose for those network nodes. This means it's a data input, or the gate, and over that's the pointer. I had to invent some kind of convention because it simply doesn't exist. So what can we do with this one here? Let's say we have just one single network. We have a text input, such as a teletype, and which we convert any word we want into a single number. Okay, what does this network do which present computers can't do? Well, for one thing, you can do some sorting. You can feed in any word in the English language, and it will learn it only once. So you can find out how many words are in this book, or how many, or you can use it as a customer listing. Let's say your secretary types in customer listing, and this book will automatically store every customer only once, no matter how many orders this man writes. You can also make it to teach you correct typing. If you store a dictionary in that thing, in that device there, and you type and you misspell a word, it will tell you so. It can't find it. So it will teach you correct typing. Another thing is those networks are unique. Every one of those networks is internally unique, which is really rather strange, because when we have a computer, we know how the data and how the program is aligned. But in this one, you never know. It depends really how and what sequence you taught different words. So let's say you have a secretary, and she types in her favorite mystery novel into that network. And you're in the spy business, and you want to tell somebody something which nobody else is supposed to know about. So you feed in the words in the teletype in the network, and take all the output numbers down, and put it on a letter or whatever, and send it to your other friend. There's no way to get the original message back from the address numbers. So it's indeed an unbreakable code. You can make data compression. As I said, every word you type into the front, into this network, coming out as a single number. Remember, the word might be as simple as rose, or it might be supercalifragilisticexpialidocious. If you send a telegram, and you send over number outputs instead of text inputs, you can save yourself 80 or 90% of your charges. Or you could use it for word processing. You can write letters or store whatever you want. Or you can recognize patterns, because this one is really recognizing every word it once stored. So let's say if you have an earthquake pattern, you have certain waves which you want to look at, and certain other waves you want to find, you can use that network to sort them out for you, to ring a bell when that particular earthquake wave hits. Well, this should make all the teleprocessing people, the cryptographers, and the data transmission people very happy already. But this is just the beginning. Let's look at a network which contains more than one net, a system which contains more than one network. Remember, all those networks can be stored in the same memory device, and they can be executed by the same microprocessor. Look, you can translate languages now. Let's say an English-German language translator. You feed an English word into this network, which converts it into single address number. The next network takes a word code, just like data characters, and converts it for a single number for each sentence. The same thing you do for the German word, only backwards. And then you have a translator. So you feed in an English sentence here, and out comes a German sentence. You feed a German sentence in that way, and comes out as English. And remember, you teach it. You don't program it. You teach it. A teacher has to sit down and type in English words and the German translations. And many teachers can do it. There's no problem with software interface and memory overflow. It's just an all automatic process. It actually absorbs your knowledge just like a sponge. Well, if you don't have it in a different language, but if you use it in the same language, you can share those networks. You see, the word encoding networks which you use to convert every word into a single number can also be used to take that number back and convert it back into the word. All the networks are bidirectional. So what could you use this one for? Well, you could use it for knowledge storage, something we have always dreamt about. You could use it as a reference, personal reference. You type in something and it will remember. You can use it as an almanac. You could type in a question and out comes the answer. How do you program it? Well, you type in the answer in the question. You